Welcome to minute 94 of season 8 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast where we fubar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is the godfather of the Movies by Minute community, Jim O'Kane. Welcome back to the show, Jim.
The week is just flying by, Rob. Thanks for having me on again.
It really is. It's we and you and I have found what to talk about.
Yes. Well, we're gonna have a lot of luck on this minute because there's no dialogue, but lots of things going on.
No dialogue at all. So minute 94 begins with Upham being dumbstruck, and ends with Miller taking a private time to grieve. So we ended things yesterday with Miller starting to walk off and giving Upham. Upham was trying to get Miller to rethink his decision to execute the prisoner, and Miller gets a little upset at him and puts him also on grave duty, graveyard duty, or whatever you want to call it, and then Miller starts walking away. And, you know, this minute then opens up with Upham just looking towards Miller, trying to figure out what the hell is going on. You know, he's just really confused. Now, they give us a very graphic shot right at the beginning of this minute of these two other German soldiers that were at this particular post that were killed, you know, during the assault or whatever it is. But, you know, you see that it must have been a grenade that exploded nearby them or whatever it is. But you also see like smoke still coming out of the bodies and of the machine gun and stuff like that. Even though it has been a few minutes, you know, it just goes to show how intense this particular fight probably was.
Pretty grim.
It's very grim, and the contrast of seeing, you know, Miller walking away and not caring about it, and then here you have Upham, who is a little more concerned about possibly saving Steamboat Willie's life. You know, it's interesting for them to frame the shot with these two dead bodies just sitting there, you know, completely destroyed. Now, you know, Miller just gave an order at the end of yesterday's episode saying, okay, go bury the paratroopers and go bury Wade. And he doesn't say anything about these German soldiers that are sitting here. He's like, I don't care about these guys.
Yeah.
You know, and it shows part of the whole idea here that, you know, if you put yourself in the shoes of your enemy and then you look. So, I mean, let's talk a little bit about how Steamboat Willie's supposed to look at all this thing. So here he was at a post with, let's assume these two other guys. These two guys are his good buddies. These are his Wade and Caparzo, who just died. You know, and he then needs to, you know, obviously when a movie like this is being made, and you know, it's clear who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. So you don't want. You don't think for a second that you need to think about it from the perspective of the bad guy. But if you were to switch around, you know, turn the tables here, so like how would, you know, how should Steamboat Willie be acting? Here his two good buddies were just killed, and he's trying to find a way to save himself.
Yeah, I don't, you know, this is something I've never thought about. Is I was wondering, with the Normandy invasion, there must have been a lot of German casualties, and I'm not sure. Are there German cemeteries at Normandy?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, I have no idea what happened to all those. I mean, everybody was buried just for the simple sake of hygiene, but I don't know if there's any. You know, stones marking those places.
Right. I mean, according to the statistics, there were 23,000 German soldiers that died in Normandy, 67,000 wounded, and more than 200,000 that were either missing or are considered or were captured at the time.
Ah, there. I've just looked it up. There is a Lacombe German War Cemetery, and it's located close to the American Landing Beach at Omaha. And it doesn't have a list of how many are buried there. It seems to be. It contains the remains of over 21,200 German military personnel.
Yeah, I mean these numbers, even these, just thinking 21,000 is, they're numbers that are unfathomable to even think
Yeah.
about.
And there's a German War Graves Commission that tracks the where the and they do have headstones and things.
Right. Yeah, it always makes me also think about the fact that in the famous scene in Platoon. At the end, where they're just bulldozing all the bodies of the Vietnamese soldiers,
Yeah.
nonchalantly just bulldozing them into this huge pit.
Yeah, I used to live in the town of Winchester, Virginia, which changed hands 72 times during the Civil War. And there's a national cemetery there for Union soldiers, but there's also a Confederate cemetery, and it's just outside of the National Cemetery. There's a fence marking the outside of it. One of the notable historic features of that cemetery is the first United States Memorial Day was held at the Confederate Cemetery, and that spread to the Union Cemetery the following year, I believe. It happened in 1866. There was a memorial for Confederate soldiers. We're in the South. We're in what used to be the Confederacy. And the memorial to it, basically, you're decorating the graves of the soldiers. It spread to the Union side as well. And from what I understand, it became a point of healing post-war, that all the different war widows from both sides would come and decorate the graves. But yeah, I had never thought about where all the Germans must have been buried. I mean, you can't really drag the bodies all the way back to Germany to put them there. So obviously, there's a large cemetery in Normandy.
Right, and again, who would have to bury them? Did the Allies bury them themselves, or did they force the prisoners to do it, or paid locals to do it? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It says initially, American and German dead were buried in adjacent fields, but American dead were later disinterred and either returned to the U.S. or reinterred at the Normandy American Cemetery Memorial, 15 kilometers away. After the war, 12,000 German dead were moved from approximately 1,400 field burials across Normandy to Lacombe. And the cemetery is maintained and managed by the Voluntary German War Graves Commission. It's not a governmental bureau. It's a volunteer organization made up of German citizens came to locate, maintain, care German war graves outside of Germany.
Oh, wow.
They have an active volunteer list of 82,000 people. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
and that was set up after the signing of the 1954 Franco-German Treaty on War Graves. Lacombe was formally cared for, allowing the remains of 12,000 German soldiers to be moved from 1,400 locations in the French departments of Manche, Calvados, and the Orne. In 1954, the Franco-German War Graves Agreement ratified the reinterment commission of the Volksbund. Could move the Volksbund was a volunteer group. They could move German bodies from field graves and village cemeteries. During the removals, many previously anonymous German soldiers were identified. In 1958, the youth section of the Volksbund drew people from seven nations to work on the cemetery. Layout and landscaping of the site began immediately after the handover, and in the middle of the cemetery, there is a resting place of 207 unknown and 89 identified German soldiers interred together in a mass grave.
Wow.
So, yeah, an impressive work.
Yeah, seriously. And so at this point, you know, then we get a wide shot of the men working on the grave detail. You know, we see Mike standing by watching, and Upham is there, and so is Jackson. We see Jackson's arm has been bandaged. You know, with someone pointed out, one of my guests, that, you know, in World War II movies, you know, whenever someone puts a bandage on in during a war movie, so there's always blood that comes out of it.
Yeah. You know, just the market. Yeah, just really bad sealing it up, I guess.
That's right. That's right. And then we see Steamboat Willie digging on the ground. And then Jackson takes a swig from a canteen and then hands it to Upham, who takes a drink. And then I've never noticed this before. Upham then gives the canteen to Steamboat Willie. Yeah. And then Jackson gets really upset. He bends down, grabs it, and starts yelling at Upham. Have you ever noticed that before?
Yeah, yeah. He basically knocks it out of Steamboat Willie's hands. Like, no, you're not getting any.
That's right. You know, but it's great. You know, just this little nonverbal communication of you know, Jackson basically saying, "This is a prisoner. Why should we waste our water on him? You know, let him finish digging the grave, and that's it. And then we'll move on." You know, so I like the way that they do that, because he like grabs it really quickly, and then right after that, the scene changes and we see a map, and you can see some of the names on the map. Not too many. There's was it Liesville, and you know, there's something marked that says the SS and a barbed wire, and you know, it again, for someone who's an avid World War II map reader, you got a lot to look at here. But since I'm not one of those, you know, I'm not going to try. You know, there's a few places where it's marked the SS, 82nd, you know, a minefield, things like that. It's interesting that we get this, you know, this few seconds where Miller is looking at this map. And then we see that Miller is on the other side, basically, of the radio station, and he's all alone, and just staring down at this map. And I gotta say, this is one of the scenes in this movie that shows how great of an actor Tom Hanks is. You know, here he is, all on his own. You know, we're gonna get close to a minute of him just being there all alone. And just showing the difficulty of being here and being an officer who needs to make the decisions as to what's happening and stuff like that. Because he just, you know, as he's looking at the map, he just starts breaking down. And the first thing that he does is amazing. He moves his position so that he's even lower down on the ground, so that nobody can see that he's being affected by this. You know, he's, I guess, embarrassed to make sure that if anyone will see him, you know, in this particular situation. And it's a great reaction for him.
Oh, yeah. I was about to say, one of the interviews that I had on another podcast, I talked with an actress who's since passed away, Rihanna Black, good friend. She talked about one of the most difficult things to film is a scene where you're crying. She said, because you can only go so far with it, and then it's hard to pull it back, because where do you go after you're crying? So I think Hanks does a fantastic job here, being able to lose it and then unlose it. That's an amazing thing to do on screen, and get it in the time needed and where the shot needs to happen.
Yeah, for sure. You know, because he's just all on his own, just crying, clenching his fist with one hand. The other hand, he's sort of crumpling the map a little bit. And you see that, you know, all of these emotions have just come back to him. You know, we don't know specifically on you know why he's crying. Is he crying because his decision killed Wade? Is he crying because he needs to now make a decision as to what's the right thing to do with the prisoner? It could be so many different things.
Yeah, and that's yeah. I mean, and that's the best thing about cinema is that you don't have to tell anybody. You can let the audience decide on that.
That's right.
And I think that it draws you into the story a little bit better too.
It's true. And you know, I just love the way that he does this. It goes back to the whole thing with his hand that was shaking, you know, when he has a little bit of a reprieve from battle, but during battle his hand is perfectly okay and things like that. And here we see his hand shake a little bit also. But he just can't hold it together. That's what it comes down to. That's the bottom line here. And it comes across so genuine. You know, you truly believe that this character is completely torn up and distraught over something. You know, again, I like the way you said it. It could be anything. You know, so, you know, it's for the audience member to decide on their own what is it that he's crying about. So I just like the way that he's doing this. You know, maybe he's grieving, maybe he's upset that he didn't think about the fact that they should have you know, not done the assault. You know, again, there's so many different options of what it could be. What would be your first gut reaction as to what it could be?
I get the feeling that he had guilt. He felt guilt about this was an avoidable death. And he's been holding from thinking about it. He's kind of been ignoring thinking about it because there's too many other things to do, deciding what to do with the prisoner and stuff like that. But I think when he had a moment, he's like, you know, this was my fault. This is the Wade is dead because of a decision that I made. And I know I know all this week I've been going back to Henry V, but Henry V said that the every subject's duty is to the king, but the fate of but the king isn't responsible for the fate of all of his subjects. That's the state of their souls is the subject's responsibility. So he has to get over the part where what he's doing, and I think that math comes up at another point in the film where Miller has to say, well, if I lose one to save 10, then the math works out.
Right. But he talked about that. He talked about it in the church. We discussed that a few weeks ago.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah. I mean, I think that calculation is kind of, it doesn't offer a lot of solace because, you know, he still lost somebody, and it was at his decision not to continue with the main mission and go off on the side quest that got Wade killed.
Okay, I definitely agree with that, and you know I still believe that he did make the right decision. To follow through on the assault from the perspective that he said if we don't do this, someone else is going to get ambushed, and then we don't want that, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, and that's the way this minute ends with Miller continuing to sob. Not much happens here, but so much happens here at the same time. You know, by the way that you can see that. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
No. I mean, there's no dialogue. We have to kind of guess at what's going on in the minds of Miller and all the others. But it's still, I mean, it's amazing how powerful this particular minute is without any words.
Right. It's true. All right. So every Thursday we have a segment that's actually a game.
No, dear.
So this movie is filled with so many actors that are so recognizable from so many different movies. So I have created a game called Say What Thursday, where the idea is that I'm going to give you a movie quote and I'm going to tell you the year that the movie came out. And you have to tell me who's the actor who says this quote and in what movie. Now, obviously, because there are so many actors in this movie, I decided that you know, I'm going to narrow it down to three. So every Thursday when I play this game, there will be three different people that it could be from.
So if I keep saying Vin Diesel, I'll be... I have one chance in three of getting it right. Okay.
No, not necessarily, because there's no guarantee that I will be using all three of them.
Okay.
You have to think about that for muscle. So your three actors that it could be are either Ted Danson, Dale Dye, or Tom Hanks.
All right. Let's see. I'm ready. I just had a sip of iced tea, so I'm fully caffeinated.
There you go. There you go. All right. So the first movie that you're going to have to try and guess the quote from came out in 1986. Okay, and the quote is, "Be advised, we've got zips in the wire down here."
Oh,
It could be Ted Danson, Tom Hanks, or Dale Dye. And if you want lifelines, we have lifelines also.
I'm gonna go with Dale Dye.
In what movie?
Was it Hamburger Hill?
Nope.
No, wait, that was earlier.
Hamburger Hill was 87.
Yeah. I don't know.
You're on the right track. You are definitely on the right track. It is Dale Dye. I will give you that.
And so,
what movie was he in 1986 that basically started his career?
Was he in? No, he wasn't in Platoon. He was wasn't he in Platoon? He was in Platoon.
He was in Platoon.
Right?
Yes. This is one of his famous lines from Platoon. Yes.
Yes. Okay.
That's where he started his his friendship with Oliver Stone helped him create his whole company. So yes, that is a quote from Dale Dye in Platoon. He plays the captain who ends up calling the airstrike on the area.
Right.
And at the end.
Ah. Okay.
Okay. All right. The next one from 1993. Okay. Remember, it could be Dale Dye, Ted Danson, or Tom Hanks. The quote is, "I appreciate your faith in my abilities."
Appreciate your faith in my abilities. I'm gonna go with. These are real generic. I have to tell you. let me think. I'm trying to think of Danson was in the 90s. My problem with Danson is that I always get I keep thinking everything gets overwritten by Cheers. I know he was in Gross Point Blank, but that's way later. And it was 93?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go with Hanks because I think Danson was busy with Cheers at the time. I don't think he was in any movies. Maybe I'm wrong.
Okay, it is Tom Hanks. And okay. What movie did he do in 1993 that this is a quote from? "I appreciate your faith in my abilities."
Was it Sleepless in Seattle?
Well, you got the year right, but no. Okay. It was not. What's the other movie he did in 1993?
Gosh. I am doing this without benefit of IMDb. I'm just trying to.
I should hope so.
Was it you? You've got Mail?
No, You've Got Mail. It's 1998.
98. Okay. 93. It's way after Bachelor Party. It's way after. 93. Castaway was after that.
Castaway was 2000.
Yeah, Castaway was way after. This must be really fascinating for the audience.
It's always fascinating listening to the way that Jim's mind, works.
Yeah. I'm just trying. I'm thinking of 1995 was Apollo 13, so 1993. Was it Sleepless in Seattle?
No, you asked that already.
I know. I can't. When was the Madonna movie? Was that A League of Their Own?
No, that was 92. He won an Oscar for this movie.
I will probably scream when he won an Oscar. Denzel. Oh, crap. Philadelphia?
Yes. It's very good.
Oh, okay.
Very good.
I didn't know that. Okay. That was 93.
That was 93.
I thought that was... Okay, I thought that would have been earlier.
Yeah. Okay, next one. This is a movie from 1995. Okay, the quote is, "Gentlemen, what are your intentions?"
Oh, come on. game over, man. Game over. Yeah, he's talking to Kevin Bacon and Bill Paxton, and he's deep in cislunar space on Apollo 13, 1995.
Yes, he is. Very good.
Directed by Ron Howard.
Very good.
I've seen that one.
Okay, next one from 2013. Remember, it could be Dale Dye, Tom Hanks, or Ted Danson. There's no greater joy than that seen through the eyes of a child, and there's a little bit of a child in all of us.
Well, it's way too late for Big. Is it Ted Danson? Because we haven't hit him yet. I'm gonna guess Ted Danson, but I have no idea what movie.
No, it's not Ted Danson.
Okay. Eyes of a child. See that? The eyes of a child. Oh, wait. I'm trying to think if... When was the Mr. Rogers thing? Was that... That was much later.
No, Mr. Rogers was much later. I think it was 2019.
Yeah. Oh, wait. What year?
2013.
What? 2013. Yeah, that would fall in with one of my movies. I think... Crap. It must have been... It wasn't that... I'm going to guess Walt Disney Saving Mr. Banks.
And you would be correct.
Okay. I thought that 2010. Okay.
Okay. And the final one from 1995. Okay. Remember, it could be Ted Danson, Tom Hanks, or Dale Dye. Okay. 1995. It's like flying with a dead elephant on your back.
Oh, that's Jim Lovell. Apollo 13. Okay.
I was trying to find something a little more difficult that maybe you wouldn't recognize right away. So yes, I spared you and didn't give you any Ted Danson.
Yeah. No, Ted Danson free. I'm trying to think of a feature film that I saw Ted Danson in. I don't remember any of them.
Three Men and a Baby.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Three Men and a Baby, of course.
Dad. With Jack Lemmon. He was in what was that called? The one where he was in love with his cousin. I think it was maybe called Cousins. That's very possible.
Okay.
With Isabella Rossellini.
Isabella Rossellini. Yeah. Okay.
He was in Made in America with Whoopi Goldberg.
That's right, yes. Okay.
Yeah, he has a few movies. He was in Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah,
if you've heard of that one.
Yeah,
Captain Hamill.
Yes.
Okay, so Jim, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Jim O'Kane?
Yes, I am always available. You can go to jimokane.com, JIMOKANE.com, and you can find all of my podcasts out there that they keep growing and growing. Right now we're working behind the scenes. If you're listening after December 1st, 2025, you can check us out at the newest one, Captain America Minute, where we're talking about the Joe Johnson 2011 film, Captain America, the First Avenger. And we have Joe Johnson as not a frequent guest, but a sometimes guest. So you can find all about the Marvel Cinematic Universe in the privacy of your own car or headphones. We're ready to talk to you, but check that out. The fun begins December 1st, 2025, at a podcatcher near you.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Instagram, find me on Twitter, find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Jim, you feel like coming back again tomorrow to continue crying this out?
We'll get there. We're going to win this war.
All right. So, until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. In my solitude, you haunt me with rage.
one bone.